Welcome to the Cherry Leaf Podcast. In this episode, we're going to look at Brexit, its effects on your business, and the issues around communicating any changes you'll need to make to the staff in your organisation. Part 1, Introduction. We're recording this in May 2017. And it is likely that by April 2019, the United Kingdom will be out of the European Union and out of the single market. And that may well have an effect on your business, its trading arrangements, how you run your business, and how your staff have to work. In this, we'll look at some of the potential effects it will have on your business. Now, we are not professional advisors, we're not lawyers, we're not accountants. Take professional advice, check with a lawyer, check with an accountant.
A few minutes ago in Brussels, the United Kingdom's permanent representative to the EU handed a letter to the President of the European Council on my behalf, confirming the government's decision to invoke Article 50 of the Treaty on European Union. The Article 50 process is now underway. The United Kingdom is leaving the European Union.
With the triggering of Article 50, the United Kingdom is likely to be out of the single market in 2 years' time. It will be able to set its own regulations within the United Kingdom, but it will almost certainly have to follow EU regulations when it comes to doing any trade with the remaining EU 27 countries. Part 2. What will being outside the EU mean? To try and get an assessment of what implications being outside of the single market will have for our business, we've looked at the guidance on the gov.uk website for importing goods from outside of the EU, because that's a pretty good indication of what type of paperwork and barriers there will be if it's us that's trying to import goods into the EU with the UK being outside. And we'll put the links to those sites, those pages on the gov.uk website in the notes for this particular podcast. So within the EU, most goods are in free circulation and you can import from one EU 27 country to another with minimal customs control. You don't have to pay import duty or VAT if the company is VAT registered. Imports from outside the EU are treated differently, and the two key points are you have to make an import declaration to customs and you have to pay import duty and import VAT. To do that, you have to send a customs declaration and submit what's called a community transit declaration. And there is a computerised system to do that. It's called the new computerised transit system. And with that, you have to send a declaration to the country you're importing, to the country's tax authority. And that's usually done with something called the Single Administrative Document, or the SAD. Now, these can be submitted electronically using a system called CHIEF, Customs Handling of Import and Export Freight, or it can be done manually, although if you do it manually it's going to take a lot longer to process and your goods could be stuck in a warehouse for quite a while whilst that processing goes on. And in that single administrative document you must include the customs classification, the commodity code, the value of your goods, the customs procedure code explaining what's being done with the goods, for example, that they're going to be imported to be circulated freely around the EU. So if you're exporting to Germany, you have to pay the VAT at the German rate. If you're exporting to Ireland, pay the VAT at the Irish rate. And you have to pay VAT on any import duty as well. And that VAT needs to be paid to the tax authority. So it will go to the Irish tax authority, the German tax authority, the French tax authority. Import duty, you may have to pay import duty depending on the classification of goods. Some goods are duty-free, some have duty on them. What may be a challenge or more challenging than today is you usually need to provide documentary proof showing where the imports originated from. So if you have a piece of equipment and some of your components come from China, or some of your components come from America or the Republic of Ireland, then you will need to provide documentary proof that that is where they've come from. And the goods won't be released normally until you've paid all the charges due. So where we have no paperwork and no duty today, we, if we are outside of the single market, will have paperwork. And the Parliamentary Treasury Committee has estimated that the current amount of customs declarations at Dover, which is about 60 million per year, will go up to 300 million a year after the UK leaves the EU. So there's going to be a fivefold rise in customs checks. Now, one of the things HMRC is going to have to do is adapt its IT system. It's in the process of introducing a new IT system. They're going to have to ramp that up to take five times the capacity it was originally specced for. And there are 25 other systems apparently at the borders that are going to be have to be adapted as well. Now, there are some concerns, the Treasury Committee have some concerns that this IT system won't be ready by April 2019. We'll just have to see quite what happens in that situation. Now, in our case, we don't sell hardware products. Our business is about services, and we offer online training courses. And there are also VAT rules for people that sell online training, digital products, as it were, ebooks. And there is a thing called VATMOS. So it used to be that VAT that was charged on electronic goods differed depending on which country the supplier was in. So if you were based in one country, you might not have to charge any VAT at all. And if you were based in the UK, you'd have to charge 17.5% or 20% VAT. That meant that UK companies would be less competitive than companies in other countries. So that changed, and now when it comes to selling electronic goods, it's where your customer is based that's important. So if your customer is in Germany, the VAT rate is the rate for Germany. If your customer is in France, the VAT rate is for France. And what happens with that VAT that you as a seller collect is you're meant to then pass on that VAT to the German tax authority for the German customers, to the French tax authority for the French customers, and so on. And it looked like everybody was going to have to register with every VAT body where there was a customer in that particular country. So if you had somebody that bought your product from Germany, you would then have to register, VAT register your company in Germany. To minimise the impact of this and the sheer paperwork of doing that, maybe for a £3 or €3 sale, HMR Revenue and Customs introduced something called VATMOS, VAT Mini One-Stop Shop. And what that means is if you register for VATMOS, you send in with your VAT return information on what you've sold to the EU 27 countries, and the VAT that was on those goods you actually transfer or pay to HMRC. And then what HMRC does is that distributes that on your behalf to the different tax authorities throughout the EU. So if the UK is outside of the single market, is outside of the EU, what is going to happen to VATMOS? And at this stage, we don't know. It may be that you will have to register your company in one country, such as a republic, and they will have an equivalent to VATMOS, and you can deal with the issues that way. Or it might mean that for each sale in each country, you'll need to register with the relevant tax authority. Another aspect of your business that may be affected is around hiring and looking after your staff, the HR aspect. At the moment, British citizens are EU citizens, and EU citizens, when they're living and working within the EU, have rights. They have rights to healthcare, to employment, they have the right for freedom of travel, the ability to bring over their spouse to live in a particular country. With the UK out of the EU, this is one of the issues that's going to need to be resolved within the negotiation period.
Here's the chief EU negotiator, Michel Barnier, speaking on the 5th of May.
There are a series of rights at stake. And let me, ladies and gentlemen, give you some examples. For instance, what if a skilled Polish worker for BMW who works at Plant Oxford loses his job? Will he keep his right to UK unemployment benefit for a few months, even if he goes back to Poland to look for a job? That is EU today. The withdrawal agreement must provide clear and affirmative answers to this question and some. Let me give you some further example of the sorts of situations that we will inevitably have to confront. A Greek engineer in the UK must maintain the right to export the full amount of her old age pension to Greece if she decides to retire in Athens. A German worker in the UK must have access to health care under the same conditions as UK nationals.
Will EU citizens still have those rights when Britain is outside of the EU? Or will those rights be lost and they be treated like third country citizens, like American nationals or Canadian nationals, and lose those rights? Now, depending on what the outcome of that is, that will affect what rights certain staff members may or may not have as employees within your organisation. Part 3. So, is there a way of staying within the EU? One option we've looked at is, wouldn't it be simple if we just set up a company within the EU, within the remaining EU 27 nations? So, if we had a client in Hungary, that they would trade with our subsidiary in Germany or our subsidiary in the Republic of Ireland or Estonia, wherever. And so the trade would be still within the single market. And therefore, the UK arm, the UK business would only trade and export and import and deal with sales within the United Kingdom. But if there was an inquiry or a sale from an EU 27 country, then that would be dealt with by the sister company based in a country within the EU 27 nations. One place that many people, I'm sure, will be looking at is the Republic of Ireland. It's close by. Culturally, it's very similar to the United Kingdom, and they speak English. And we have looked at that ourselves and got some advice from a company called CAG Chartered Accountants, caggroup.com. And if the Republic is an option that you want to explore, then you could contact them for professional advice. There are some slight differences between the law relating to companies within the Republic and relating to the UK. There's obvious things like directors are expected to know Irish company law. What's a bigger issue, if you wanted to explore the option of setting up in the Republic of Ireland, is that at least one director must be a resident in an EEA. Now, that regulation, that requirement, might be relaxed by the Irish government. You never know. We'll have to see if that is the case. But as it stands at the moment, you would need a director who is based outside of the United Kingdom. Of more significance is the requirement that a company may not be formed or registered unless it appears to the Irish Registrar of Companies that that company will carry on an activity in the Republic of Ireland. And that means that not only do you need to have a registered office in the Republic, you must also have a place in the Republic where what's called the proposed activity will be carried out, and from where the central administration will be carried out. Now, that can be the same address, but what that means is you need a physical office in the Republic of Ireland. It can't just be your company name up on a wall in an accountancy firm somewhere. You could look at other countries. You could look at places like France and Germany. And a number of larger companies are looking at Frankfurt and Berlin. However, with Germany, there is more restrictions on setting up a limited company. Many more people trade as sole traders. And you're looking at, from what I understand, either 75,000 euro share capital to set up, or with some exemptions, or in certain cases, I think within software and IT, that can be reduced to 37,000 euro share capital. So if you're a small business, that might be a challenge. In addition to that, you've got issues over language and your ability to understand information correspondence in the German language. So where else? Another option is Estonia. Estonia has a scheme called the e-residency scheme, and 1,000 UK citizens are now e-residents of Estonia. What that means is that if you are an e-resident, you have the ability, the right to set up a business within Estonia. Now, again, like with Ireland, it does require there to be a director who is based in an EEA country. And again, we'll see whether that requirement is relaxed to allow the directors to be based in the United Kingdom. One of the attractions of Estonia is that the correspondence is in English, or can be in English, and the share capital requirements are considerably lower compared to, say, Germany as well. It depends on the situation, but it's around between 1,700 euro and 3,000 euro, and some of that share capital can be reinvested back into the business. Part 4. So, what are the implications for your organisation? As a country, the United Kingdom will be able to set its own regulations within the UK for how it trades the rules and regulations that are there. But in order to trade with the EU 27 countries, if you want to sell something in Sweden or Denmark, it's almost certain that that will require companies to follow EU regulations in that particular situation. So we may have UK regulations we need to follow in some situations and EU regulations to follow in other situations. And this can mean that you, your organisation, will have to manage two sets of compliance rules, possibly two sets of policies and procedures, with a great deal of similarity between them, but some areas of divergence. Now, one approach to doing this may be to have two documents, and you cut and paste between the two documents. The downside with that is it can take time to do that, to cut and paste in all the relevant sections. It's also very easy for mistakes to creep in as well, and very difficult to keep those documents up to date. Another way is to have one document, and to have different sections marked up identifying which territory it relates to. So one section's marked up to be the United Kingdom, one section marked up saying it relates to the EU 27 countries. And then you can use that information when you publish your content to your end users. You can create output that your users can decide to filter based on different criteria. So they could decide to take a view of the information that only relates to the EU or only relates to United Kingdom. They could take a look at what the rules are before the United Kingdom leaves the European Union and also see what the rules will be post Brexit in April 2019. One of the attractions of this means that the person that's writing these policies and procedures just has one document to update. There's none of this cutting and pasting that's needed. And they only, where there's content that's common to both documents or both versions, both set of regulations, you only need to write it once. This is known as conditional text, and you can use build tags to also include or exclude content from output. So rather than let the users filter the information, you can just create versions that are specific, that just have the only information that's relevant to one audience that's only interested in the EU27 rules, and another version for the audience that's only interested in the UK-only guide. We've put some examples of this on our website, and we'll provide some links in the show notes where you can go and you can see examples of how, proof of concept examples of how policies and procedures can look. From a user perspective, one of the advantages of doing this is it can reduce the amount of clutter on the page. The reader doesn't get overwhelmed with information because they only see the information that's relevant to them. The stuff that's not relevant has been filtered out. And what we've also done is marked up a couple of topics for the audience, such as departments or budget holders or line managers. And what that can do is, if you are a line manager, you can click on that A to Z folder icon, go to your job title, click on that, and then you can see what procedures or what policies are relevant to you, where you're expected to do something or someone is going to ask you for information. So that's been a brief outline of where we are, as far as we know, in terms of Brexit, the implications to our business and to businesses like ours. Just as a final note, we have a policies and procedures course, a classroom course, running on the 13th of June in central London. So if you want to know more about topic-based authoring, things like conditional text and the ways in which you can reduce the clutter in those type of documents, enable your writers just to manage one document, then this course may be of interest to you. And again, I'll put the notes on where on the cherryleaf.com website you'll find details about that course. So we'll see. We'll see where Brexit leads the country, leads organisations, leads companies into the future.
You'll find the notes for this podcast episode at cherryleaf.podbeam.com. And Podbeam is P-O-D-B-E-A-N.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, feedback, comments, queries, you can use email info@cherryleaf.com. You can contact me on Twitter. It's at Ellis Pratt, E-L-L-I-S, P-R-A-T-T.